You are now listening to The Air Raid, a podcast put on by the writers of Viva the Matadors, an SB Nation site covering everything Texas Tech athletics.
Hey everybody, it is Wes Shaw from Viva the Matadors here again with you for The Air Raid podcast. This is episode number 5, and I've got here with me my man Drew. We're rolling with a two-man crew today. Typically we have three, but due to the holiday weekend, I guess everyone else got tied up with commitments elsewhere, so it is just the two of us. Drew, how's it going today, man?
Pretty good, you know, just staying committed to the Red Raiders.
That's right. The rest of the Riders are in the wrong here by making commitments outside of a Red Raider commitment. So how was the 4th? Did you get out to see any fireworks, do anything special?
I went to Kaboom Town in Addison on Friday, and then yesterday just kind of grilled out and swam over at a friend's. What about you?
We are lucky enough to live a little bit out in the country, so there were fireworks pretty much anywhere you looked in a 360-degree radius around the house. So it was nice. We sat out on the back porch, grilled, and watched fireworks. So didn't have to go anywhere, didn't have to do anything, could drink as much as we wanted and not have to suffer the consequences.
Yeah, sounds like pretty good little setup.
Yeah. So anyway, we will jump into the questions today. This may end up being a little shorter since there's only two of us, but we'll jump in. So it seems like everyone over the past couple weeks, since the, forgive me for forgetting his name, but the Oklahoma president made a comment on the Big 12 expanding. And since then, everyone's jumped on board as far as giving their opinions. In fact, I think Kirby Hocutt the other day had a, was it Kirby or was it our president? It was our president. It was the Tech president, made a couple of comments in regards to the Oklahoma president talking Big 12 expansion. So rambled a little bit, but Drew, what do you think about the Big 12 expanding? Everyone else has given their opinion. We'll give ours. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they don't expand just to, you know, for the sake of having 12 teams. I think they, if they do expand, it will have to be a benefit for the Big 12. So, you know, people could say, you know, Boise State, where, you know, that's almost just a one-way benefit. You know, that's them coming to a big, you know, pro or a big conference, whereas they don't really provide the Big 12, you know, with any benefits. I look at schools like UCF or South Florida, where that would let us tap into, you know, Florida. You know, Big 12 would have a team based in Florida. You know, they have, you know, big recruits there that would help us, you know, reach out to them. And then, you know, maybe one of the Florida schools, and along with maybe an East Coast team like East Carolina or UConn, whereas, you know, with UConn, they would help out a lot with basketball as well and help us tap into the East Coast. So I think if we do expand, it needs to be for the sake of benefiting the Big 12, not to just go out and get two schools so we can have, you know, two more schools help us off in the playoffs and what have you. I think, you know, if we targeted one of those Florida teams and then, like I said, an East Coast team, UConn or East Carolina, something like that, where it's a two-way beneficial, you know, thing going on there, where it's just not a one-way street.
Yeah, and see, therein lies the problem with me is that everything feels like scraps at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, who is it, BYU? They're mildly interesting. They're not a home run, you know. UCF, South Florida, they're okay. They would provide, you mentioned, a little bit of benefit recruiting-wise. We'd get a little visibility into the state. TV viewership-wise, we'd get into a couple of decent-sized markets. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, it's not, neither one of those are home runs. It's kind of like fighting over scraps. UConn was another, Cincinnati, Boise State. I mean, it was just like, you know. It felt like exactly what you were saying. If we were to get any of those teams, it felt like expanding for the sake of expansion and not making it a home run. I guess I'm kind of stuck on that word. But it's not a home run. It's kind of just expanding to get to 12 teams. And I feel like we're just not in a good spot, having not grabbed someone else earlier. The, you know, Florida State, Clemson, Louisville, you know, some of those teams were on the radar at different points over the last handful of years. And at this point, all of those type teams are locked up. And so it is. It's like we're here fighting for scraps. And it's just, I don't know. I'd rather just stick to the 10 that we have currently. And if, you know, a couple teams that aren't currently on the radar fall into our laps, let's take a look at them if they're must adds and not just, you know, which I feel like all these teams are.
Yeah, and I feel like if we stay at 10, you know, for a few years, and then if one program leaves, I feel like it will just kind of dissolve the Big 12, where people, you know, teams will join Big 10, SEC, and Pac-12. Whereas if, you know, if we do get to 12 and some teams leave or something like that, you know, we can still be solid at 10. I would just hate to, you know, in the future, if the Big 12 just kind of, I guess, goes away, you know.
Yeah, and I wrote this in one of the articles. I think it was in one of the point counterpoints that Jonathan and I did a couple weeks ago. Just talking about my fear with the Big 12 is exactly what you said. At some point, we're left with, you know, our private parts in our hands while everyone else is expanding to get to 16 teams. Mm-hmm. And to eight team divisions within a conference. And we're just kind of stuck here like, oh, everyone else is at 16 now and we're still at 10. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't want to expand just for our expansion's sake. So it's kind of one of those things. I don't know. It's a tough position to be in right now because I feel like we are the one Power 5 conference that's just a little unsteady.
Yeah, exactly.
We're the most unsteady, you know. So I guess we'll see how it turns out. I don't know. Yeah, not really blown away by anybody, so we'll see where it goes. Question now tech-related. Because so much of the offense revolves around the quarterback, we'll take them out of the equation. So outside of the quarterback, is there a particular player you feel like can have the biggest impact, positive impact on the team?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Mike Mitchell, you know, since he was a former five-star, and I think at the time he set the highest Spark testing, you know, record when he tested out for the Spark competition. But, yeah, I'm really excited to see him this year play linebacker. You know, like I said, he's former five-star linebacker, you know, Tech. As far as I can think back, you know, Fehoko is the highest rated, you know, defensive recruit I've seen come our way. So this will be kind of a first for me seeing, you know, a high profile guy out there on the field for us. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of impact he can have. You know, seeing him play alongside with Robertson will be, you know, I feel like those are, it sounds like those two are going to be, you know, awesome having a linebacker. So I'm really to see what he has on the, you know, on the field, whereas, you know, we can look at the numbers and what have you. We won't really know what kind of player he is till he gets out there and plays.
Yeah, I was thinking about this question, and I thought I kind of took away the defensive side automatically because we're such an offensively focused team. And so for me, I automatically went to the receivers because quarterback position is going to have a huge impact. We took them off the board. Running back, we've got Washington and Stockton. We're set. Offensive line, we're only replacing one out of five, and those remaining four put together a hell of a season for an offensive line last season. So it didn't feel like it was going to be there either. So it kind of left me at receiver, which made sense because last year we didn't have a huge playmaker, a go-to guy, put it in his hands, let him go. So I then started batting around which receiver I thought could have the biggest impact. And I think I kind of landed on Reginald Davis, merely for the fact that so much was relied, or so many people looked to him last year to break out, have a huge season, and it was such a letdown. I feel like if he can come on this season and be an impact player, it'll have a huge impact on the offense overall, because then you'll have, if he's on the outside tearing it up, you'll have Lauderdale hopefully on the other side continuing what he was doing at the end of last season. Then you're going to hopefully open up underneath for the Grants of the world, the screen games with the running backs. So I feel like if we if he can solidify the outside receiver, put up some numbers, it's going to open up the entire offense. So I felt like that's kind of where I came from. Hopefully that makes sense. But yeah, I'm going to go with Reginald Davis. And this is all in the footnote that hopefully he gets everything worked out with his spring issue that he had. But if he gets that straightened out, sees the field for the Red Raiders, he's who I'm looking at.
Yeah, I feel like him and Waterdale, between those two, you know, someone's going to have that, you know, breakout season to help us out where we don't have, you know, a bunch of just, you know, average guys running around. One of them going to have to, you know, break out to help us out.
Right, yeah, and that's kind of where I was going. I almost said Lauderdale, and I was like, well, he kind of broke out towards the end of last season, so I don't know. I struggled with it, but I definitely feel like it's in the receiving core. And like I said, I just kind of pinpointed Davis out of everybody that I had at my disposal. So I mentioned this earlier, one of the point counterpoint articles. The latest one, go read it if you haven't, is on uniforms. So I said my piece in the article, which is, from a personal standpoint, I like the traditional looks. I like flipping onto a station and knowing what teams are playing. As far as Tech, I like their traditional uniforms. I love the all black. Love the white tops, black bottoms. I don't like these wild-ass uniforms, personally. But I feel like Tech needs to do it in order to compete. It's what recruits like. It's what players like. It is a moneymaker for the schools. And also, one note that I mentioned, it goes unseen by a lot, or maybe unthought of by a lot, but the brands, Nike, Under Armour, those guys are pushing all these alternate uniforms because they make more money. I think I read where Mariota, there were 8 different Mariota jerseys on sale. At the official Oregon store. 8 different jerseys. So it's a money-making venture for those guys. So they're obviously pushing it. The schools and recruits like it. The schools make money off of it. So it's kind of a win for everybody all around, in my opinion, outside of maybe the traditional powers, where Texas, they don't have to trick it up. Alabama doesn't have to trick it up. They may in the future, but currently they can kind of ride with the way that they're going and be fine. Unfortunately, Tech isn't one of those schools, so it's going to benefit them, in my opinion, to do the alternate jerseys. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I like some of the alternate jerseys. I like the grays. You know, they're still very basic and plain. It's just kind of a different take on our normal jerseys. I like the grays, but I feel like, like you said, you know, the different brands, Nike and Under Armour, you know, push these schools for these jerseys. I feel like maybe Under Armour tries too hard to be like Nike sometimes. I feel like, I mean, because you have what, like us and Maryland kind of with these crazy Under Armour uniforms. I feel like they're trying to, you know, get one of these schools to kind of be like the Oregon for their Under Armour brand. Whereas none of these jerseys, like last year, the jerseys we wore against Oklahoma State, like those were just weird looking with the horse down the leg. And those, I didn't like those. And then the jerseys we wore against Oklahoma, I'm pretty sure like 2 years ago in the Under Armour All-American Bowl, they wore that same exact style. And like I said, that was 2 years ago. So I feel like they're trying all these different uniforms to kind of get people to notice us. But I feel like so far they've fallen pretty short, you know, trying to stand out. Whereas, you know, like I said, I do like the grays. So hopefully, you know, this year I'm sure we'll have some crazy jerseys come out. Hopefully they're a little better than what we had last year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't mind the grays. I actually, right when Kingsbury came on, there was talk of grays, and I was like, yeah, but I actually, of everything that we've worn outside of our traditional jerseys, I dig the gray uniforms. I also dug the throwbacks that we wore versus Arkansas last year.
Oh, yeah. Those are sweet. I just didn't – those Oklahoma jerseys and the Oklahoma State jerseys, I did not like.
I hear you. Yeah, I just say, like I said, for the sake of the school, I think it's in their best interest to do them. I personally just give me the standard uniforms. I also wrote last week about the nightmare scenario. It did not go over too well. Got some feedback on that. There were some people who were like, are you kidding me? But – The reality is that the things could be, we could have another 4-8 season. We could have another 3-9 season. We could also go 9-3 or 8-4. So who knows? It's all speculation at this point, and just something for us to chat about and give the reader something to think about in the off season. So what do you think the nightmare scenario is for Tech this season? Like I said, I wrote 3-9 with wins versus UTEP, Kansas, Iowa State. I had a loss versus right out of the gate to Sam Houston State, and then obviously losing to everyone not named those three, UTEP, Kansas, and Iowa State. So what does your nightmare scenario look like? What do you think is probably the worst realistic outcome for Tech in 2015?
I mean, going off of yours that you wrote, you know, I have to feel, you know, pretty similar. You know, Sam Houston State, they're a good FCS school. They're a lot better than Central Arkansas. And, you know, we came out of the gate stumbling last year. If we do the same to Sam Houston State, then we're going to lose that game. If we play like we played last year against Central Arkansas, then we're going to lose Sam Houston State. So if we come out and lose, I'm not going to be surprised. And so that could just spell, you know, trouble for the rest of the year. You know, hopefully pick up a win against UTEP. But then, like you wrote, I could see us picking up, you know, two more wins against Kansas and Iowa State. You know, those are usually wins that we get. You know, Iowa State, they've been testing us here recently too.
Yeah,
so I feel like, you know, the nightmare scenario of 3-9, you know, it's very reasonable. Just hopefully, you know, we come out and, you know, we play a lot better than we started the year last year, because after those first two games last year, we get, you know, kind of see a 4-8 season coming. So hopefully we come out this year, pick up those two wins, you know, pretty handily, and then go to play Arkansas and then start Big 12 play, you know, on a better note than what we did last year.
Yeah. So what do you think is, just a follow-up to this question, because I don't think 3-9 is going to happen. I just think it's the most realistic nightmare scenario possible. So what do you think between the nightmare 3-9, and then I think I said the dream scenario was 9-3, which of those do you think is probably more likely to happen in 2015 if you had to choose?
I would probably say the nightmare scenario.
Oh, no.
I would lean, if you said, you know, pick which one of these is more reasonable that can happen, then yeah, I would probably pick the nightmare, just because, I mean, 9-3 would be awesome, but I could see us going 3-9 a lot more easier than going 9-3. Where, I mean, if we go 6-6 or 7-5, I'll take it. But yeah, hopefully we don't go 3-9. If someone told me to choose, I would unfortunately probably lean towards the nightmare scenario instead of the dream scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think neither one of them is probably very realistic, or a big possibility. They're realistic, but not a big possibility. But yeah, if you gave me those two options, I'd probably just be with you and go more the nightmare scenario. But
it's a lot easier to lose games than win games.
Yeah, especially once it starts rolling.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do a little rapid fire focused only on the offensive side of the ball for the Big 12. So I'm going to fire out a category, offensive category. You give me the answer. So best offensive coordinator in the Big 12.
I'm going to go with a co-offensive coordinator and say Sonny Cumbie.
You know, I'm going to go Doug Meacham, who is his co-offensive coordinator at TCU. I think that dude is I don't think he's under the radar to people who really know college football, but I think to the average fan, I think that guy's under the radar. He has been nails everywhere he's been. Oklahoma State, Houston, and before Oklahoma State, he was at several smaller schools, but he's done really, really well wherever he's been, and I think he probably ends up, after this season, I bet he ends up somewhere else. He interviewed for a couple of jobs over the offseason. I think Tulsa was one job they interviewed for, and I bet he ends up somewhere else. My other answer was actually going to be Lincoln Riley.
yeah.
But I wanted to give him 1 year at Oklahoma to see how he'd do, but I think that guy's a pretty damn good coordinator. All right, best quarterback.
Going back to TCU, and I'm going to say Trayvon Boykin.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any argument on this one.
Yeah.
So, I think that one's pretty cut and dry. Best running back.
Sam J. Piron at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I know. I want to say DeAndre Washington so bad, but I can't. You're right. I'd have to go Perrine as well.
That guy just had a freak season last year.
Yeah, I think he's the best version of Adrian Peterson since Adrian Peterson.
Probably
my best description of the guy is just ridiculous. All right, let's move on. Wide receiver.
This one's a little bit of a curveball. I'm going to say Sterling Shepard just because last year he almost had a 1,000-yard season. He was just he was just caught up with injuries. But I feel like Sterling Shepard is probably the best. Now, it will just depend on who's throwing the football. But I do feel like he's one of the best receivers in the Big 12.
I do, too. I thought about him. So he was 1A, and 1B for me was Coleman for Baylor. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wanted to even say Katie Cannon, but I think I'll go with Coleman at Baylor. I think his numbers are going to be – he had solid numbers last year. I think they'll be even better this year. They lost – who'd they lose on the receiving core? Goodley, who was pretty dang good. So I think his numbers will improve just slightly. They were already pretty dang good last year, though. So – I'll go Coleman just to change it up. All right, and then last, we'll go offensive lineman.
Definitely a homer pick, and going with Laraven Clark.
I love it. I love it. I was going to do – if you went someone else, I was going to go Clark just because we got to go – got to pump our best Red Raider. But since you said that, I'll go Drango out of Baylor. He's going to be the only offensive lineman to get drafted in the first round with maybe the exception of Laraven Clark at this point. Clark has a chance at the first round, depending on how his season goes.
Yeah.
But, Spencer Drango out of Baylor is the best, I think. All right. I think that's all I got this week. Keep it a little bit shorter than other weeks. One last question off the college football scene. Since today they are playing, do the U.S. women beat Japan and get revenge for the 2011 World Cup loss?
I'm going to say yeah, and hopefully I'm predicting the future since this will be posted tomorrow. But hopefully, because, this is going to be Wombach's last World Cup. So I'm hoping that, maybe it's 1-1 heading into, the 90th minute of play. Maybe she gets a header in the back of the net, 92nd minute with 2 minutes in the stoppage time, and that's the last play of the game, and we win. So I'm predicting a Wombach header in the back of the net, 92nd minute of the match.
I'll take that prediction. I would be definitely happy with that outcome. Love it. So, I'll be tuned in.
And I'm not sure if you caught it or not, but in the Dallas Morning News, they did a top 25 ranking of our players, and at 5 they had our punter. I was gonna see, is our 5th best player on our team our punter, or how do you feel about that ranking they had?
So I saw that. I'm glad you brought that up. I saw that and was thinking about it, and not that I think Taylor Semenk is a heck of a punter. I think he averaged something almost 43 yards last season, was third in the Big 12, if I'm not mistaken, in punting average. So, solid punter. I'll take him. If we have a punter like him every season, I'm good with that. He's always going to – he'll never be a reason that you lose the game. But fifth best, I probably take exception to that position. I pulled up the rankings real quick, and they had – Clark, Robertson, and Washington as the top three players, which Clark at number one, Robertson and Washington are interchangeable at number two and three. I agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then 4 was Jakeem Grant. And then five was Semank. That one threw me for a loop. I think you could have went, I don't know. I think you could have went Mahomes. I think you could have went Jackson, Caster, which they had at number six. So I think there are a number of players we probably could have put in front of Semank. Not that I don't think he's a good punter, and glad he's on the team. But what do you think? Do you kind of agree that maybe that's a little high for a punter?
Yeah, I feel like if your punter is one of your top five players, that's kind of spelling trouble for your team.
Yeah, okay. But, yeah, good point. I agree with that.
If, you know, I could see Mahomes being there, Lauderdale, like you're saying, Caster. But, yeah, I feel like if your fifth best player on your team is your punter, then your team might be hurting talent-wise. But hopefully he's just a really awesome punter, and that's not the case.
Yeah, and hey, he may end up winning the kicking duties, and at that point he becomes a lot more valuable. So
yeah, exactly.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening, Drew. Thanks for spending some time with us.
No problem.
Yeah, go USA Women. We'll chat next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Bye.